We're recording.
The sangria might taste gross because there's no ice
in it. Oh, it's going to be horrible. Yeah. I mean,
but you know.
But that's fine. Let me take a sip of my iced coffee. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Perturbed.
Sorry, I need to grab my coffee. It's over here.
Don't mind us. Holly's grabbing her coffee. Listen, I have mine in my hand right now. And I'm hoping that the listener has a little something to nibble on, a little something to sip along with us. Which line do you want?
So Michael, what perturb?
Wait, no, we didn't do this. We did the thing.
What thing?
Welcome back to another episode of.
Oh. Okay. I don't know. Okay, you start.
Okay. All right. Welcome back to Apartment 1R.
This is your hosts, Holly and Michael.
And we are Perturbed.
So, Michael, what perturbs you?
Okay. So, what perturbs me is the sheer amount of lying to oneself it takes to pretend like you enjoy a trip to the zoo.
Yeah.
We saw a giraffe. The giraffe's half dead. The monkey's dilapidated.
But you know what it is? I feel like I've never actually made the decision to go to a zoo myself. It's always been sort of, I don't want to say forced upon me, but maybe like, I feel like zoos were not meant to be forced upon me, but meant to be granted.
Yeah, like, because we live in a culture and a society where it's on that list of like fun things to do, like go to the shore, go to the beach, go to the zoo. Like, it's on that list.
But when I think about it, you're right. Because every element of sensory information coming into the body is foul.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like an overwhelming amount of misery from all angles. It's like you're waiting in line all day. You're in the heat. The food's expensive. There's kids running around screaming. You're tapping on the glass. Ooh, look, a giraffe. It's like hanging, its neck's like hanging with depression into the dirt.
It smells bad. Did you point that one out?
It smells gross.
It's always hot, really hot.
The camel has one eye. It's like mutated a little bit, like limping around. They're
the whole activity is just walking, which isn't bad, but it's just, that's it. It's walking.
Like, there's just nothing about it that's like, ooh, the zoo. And like, we could sit here and go into like the animal rights issues and the political issues of it. But that's not even what we're here. We're here to, you know, with the first world problems of it all. It's the waiting in line. It's the, like, you wait in line for 3 years to see this lion, and all you see is like this like skinny, half dead lion on the hill. On the fake little hill.
Right.
And they're like, we saw animals. Like, no, Mary.
Basically, if you said to me, let's go to the zoo, I'd be like, try again.
Yeah. I'd say, no. Yeah. You know, it wouldn't even cross
I'd
my
be
mind.
Like, there's a lot of options. Uh-huh. If we have a day off and we have a little bit of money to spend,
we're not going to the zoo.
Let's brainstorm a little more here. I mean, I don't know. How much is it to get into a zoo these days?
I don't know. Too much.
Probably too much.
You know? Like, we want to see the bald eagle. We want to see the bald eagle. It can't even spread. It's like stuck down to the bottom of a cage with poop in it.
Yeah, the image is just sad.
It's just like the people there are unhappy. The animals are unhappy. The employees are unhappy.
The tourists are unhappy.
Like, this facade of this, like, lesbian zookeeper that lives in my mind at all times, like, she's not real.
I will say the one good thing about zoos I've always felt was like the aquarium area, where you sort of like walk into a tunnelish area,
and the whale's like, ooh.
Yeah, but it's more of
and it's like it's like slowly like just beating up against the glass in circles.
No, for me, what's so enticing about that area is because it's a tunnel out of the light. You're not smelling like hay and whatever that smell is of a barn anymore. Like, you sort of smell like the smell of a water park. Water in a water
it's
park.
Like,
oh, I love that smell.
Which is like a little terrifying because it's like chlorine. It's chemical.
Yeah. It's bad. But the visual is good.
The visual's there.
Like, it's like you walk in and you're like, there's this glow of blue.
Uh-huh. Wonder what it is. The illusion is alive in the aquarium.
Yeah. And they like they have it to like the wall. If I'm getting the aquarium correct, the vision I have in my head is like,
I see the vision.
You walk in and you're just like surrounded by these big walls of water.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, ooh, pointing out Dory and Nemo. And it's a good time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like the monkey that's half asleep throwing poop at the window.
It's not like dried dirt.
Yeah. You know? Like the lion has like one half dead tree in its cage.
Like if you were to trip and fall in the zoo, like I feel like there'd be a cloud of dirt dust.
Yeah. And like poop particles. Have you seen the videos of like the lions like viciously attempting to attack little girls, but there's like that plane of glass in between. Like little girls,
some, yeah.
There's like a ton of videos of little girls and little boys like going up to the glass, and the lion is like fully unhinging its jaw and trying with all of its might to like
attack
it through the glass.
They don't belong here.
I know. I'm like, why is there a lion in the Bronx? Uh-huh. That's another interesting aspect is like they're in the Bronx. Like the parrot's like, boss man, boss man.
I will say there is something about that zoo being in the Bronx that makes me feel a little bit warmer. Because
I think you were secretly a zoo lover.
No, no, no. Like, and here's the thing. For example, the zoo in Central Park, no.
I've never been. Never want
to
go.
Like, I've been around it. And like, no to that.
You could smell the hay.
It's not about the Bronx Zoo being in the Bronx that I feel like makes me feel warm. Like, a zoo being in the Bronx, like, it doesn't need to be next to the expressway. Yeah. You know, there doesn't need to be a zoo next to the... But for me, it's more of this concept that the Bronx could be, or any borough could be, besides Manhattan, could be so condensed in one area and so suburban in the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because my memories of the Bronx Zoo was like, I don't remember a city at all. Like, I don't even, it confuses me to think of the Bronx Zoo in the Bronx.
Yeah, like, where is it? Because I've been to the Bronx Zoo plenty of times and I feel like.
Now that I say it, like, it's sort of like.
Like, where was that?
Not next.
It's not in the Bronx. Like, I don't know where that was.
It's like, there's a highway there. I know that. But like, it's a highway where you see trees around.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, I like the thought that like, there are areas of the boroughs that like, you can go, you can choose which kind of lifestyle you want.
Yeah. Like, you can go to the bodega. Or you can go see the monkeys.
Or you can live in like a house with like a lawn, mm-hmm. if you want it. If you go far enough to the outskirts, which I think is where the Bronx Zoo is.
Probably. Let's go to the Bronx Zoo. Should we go?
Like the way you said it, like convinces me that you want to go.
We'll document it. Like it'll be our investigative journalism piece.
Yeah, connected to this episode.
Okay, it's just you and me here. Are you joking?
I'm getting nervous.
So, Holly is going to walk us through this week's topic.
I did some research. So, this is going to be a first for us of like actual researched material. And I feel nervous. Our topic for today is HR, human resources.
HR is such a big deal in my life right now.
Yeah. So that's my first question is, what do you know about HR and how do you feel about HR?
I feel like HR for me is like the wonderful Wizard of Oz at this point in my life. It's this constant looming threat. It's this constant looming falsehood of like, don't worry, we care about you.
Mm-hmm.
It's this constant looming, like everything you do or say, it's like, HR is going to find out. And like, I'm like, are they principals? Like, I just don't know exactly like what they are. Because half the times it's like, don't worry, if that thing makes you feel uncomfortable, you could just tell HR. It's like, okay, so they're superheroes. And then it's like, HR's coming, and then it's like we're scared of them, so I'm confused.
There's this gut feeling, I think. An instinctual. You know how instincts are usually correct? Like, they're this thing where your body, you didn't absorb information in your brain, but somehow your body sort of absorbs information,
uh-huh.
and then you have this gut feeling later on based on sort of experiences. I feel like it's like that. It's instinct. It's like animalistic instinct, the danger. It's danger, uh-huh. Uh-huh. You know? Like, our gut is telling, all of us, I think, with any industry, with HR, all of us, I think, our gut is telling us this person is
to be feared.
Yeah. They're kind of like, wasn't there like a doll or something in the SpongeBob movie where they sort of were like, hey, and they went over and that's when they transitioned into the monster scene. Do you remember it at
all? Oh yeah, it was like a huge monster in the abyss, right? And it like looked kind of cute or something, but that was just like its foot.
I can't remember exactly.
Can't remember.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about.
It's
right?
There. You know, it's on the tip of my tongue.
It's that vibe. Like there's this like thing.
HR. Yeah. One of it's like the illusion is like a big plastic bowl of like sun chips.
You know? Like that's a good snack, but it's not at a party.
And it's like, or like, it's like lemonade poured into a Dixie cup at room temp. It's like we're having a pizza party with HR.
Yeah,
and like everything's a little off. Like the brownies are like a little burnt, and like you know, it's like the illusion is like so slapped together, so hokey pokey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just, you're left there confused and like you just feel lied to when you're like, you're in the middle of the conversation, you're just realizing that you've been lied to and that
the
curtain of Oz is coming down around you.
Which I feel like is the darkest part of it all, is the dishonesty in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, just be a monster.
Right.
Like at least our principals at school, they showed us who they were. We knew that that like really scary dean who used to be a gym teacher was really fucking scary. And he was going to
so
go.
Hot.
He was hot.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
No, he was scary. Like if his gaze landed on you, you were in trouble.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to make this gay land on him, girl. Let me tell you something.
But like at least they showed their teeth.
Yeah, they showed their true cut. Yeah, they're sharks in the waters with the fin poking out, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like HR is like the piranhas that are like...
Uh-huh. Coming and nipping at your ankle.
So we're going to do a little bit of history today. Who is HR? I think we all kind of know them as like...
Well, explain
to the
girls.
If sexual harassment happens,
yes.
Sort of thing. I can give you a definition.
I have some personal stories of the times that I've been backstabbed.
Let's go through that maybe. Like personal, what we know, I think we should start off with like basic knowledge of HR, like how we see them today.
Last interaction I had was like this coworker who like relapsed on hard drugs and was telling me that, you know, he needed someone to help finish him off and that maybe I could ask one of the pretty girls if they could help me suck his dick while I was alone with him in the freezer.
Was this reported to HR? I remember this story.
Yes, it was. Yes, darling. And I was told he's in a union. We can't do anything about it. So I'm like, am I anti-union? Like, blow up the rap balloon outside and let's fire this guy. Like, I don't give a fuck what union he's in. He's harassing people.
Huh, interesting. What union is he
Listen,
in?
Listen, here's the thing.
No. Because I think that
No,
HR...
No. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
It's the lies and the facades and the blah, blah, blahs. I don't know if that's true, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the second something... quote, I'm doing air quotes, goes to HR. Oh, this case is going to go to HR. Does it even go to HR?
Well, I know that they're there to protect the company.
The sangria is delicious.
It actually is really good, isn't it?
Oh my God.
Okay, so we're going to go back. We're going to go back to the origins of human resources.
So Holly's teaching me and the listener.
And the listener. We're going back to the mid-1800s during the Industrial Revolution.
Oh my God. Like... Oh
well, what would you have
God.
Expected, do you think?
Like, I am definitely picturing, like, a blonde haircut. Like, the 70s, maybe.
Oh, really? All right, well, so it wasn't exactly started in the mid-1800s, but, like, everywhere before then, you knew your boss. Mm-hmm. You knew all your coworkers.
He gave you your 4 shillings for the 12-hour work shift, and you went on your way.
Right. But now with the Industrial Revolution, you're seeing these huge factories where people never meet their owners. And so the owners, like, they don't know you. They don't care about you. They don't know the conditions you're under. Even if they did, they wouldn't really give a shit. So now for the first time, you're like, you don't know your boss, really. So now you see some unrest happening.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see where I'm going with this in terms of HR?
The people need... support.
Needs to be some sort of middleman.
Mm-hmm.
Because Rockefeller is not coming into those factories.
Right.
He's,
Mr.
I don't know.
Mr. Triangle Shirtwaist isn't like, hey girl, you know.
I've chosen 2 instances of what I call the bad bitches of the Industrial Revolution.
Love.
First one. And this is just to like, you know, set the tone. Michael's going to pour a little bit more sangria.
Just having a little sangria.
Molly Maguire. They're a secret society originating in Ireland. Under the English government. So I don't know what the T is there. Mm-hmm. Do you know anything?
I know a little bit of the T.
So tell us about what's the deal with the English government being involved here?
The English government was like up Ireland's ass for a long time.
This is angry.
And still is, you know. But are we surprised?
Wait, they still are?
There may or may not be some turmoil, you know, because they're part they're part of the greater UK, the United Kingdom. And some Irish some Irish folk have a problem with that, you know, because they're an independent peoples.
I think this is like involved a little bit with the potato famine, but like there was some drama with landowners and the farmers.
Because the tea is that there was never a potato famine. They were just not allowed to eat their own crops because they were being owned by the British government, of course. And they were taking all their crops and letting their people starve that were growing the crops because they needed all this demand of these potatoes.
The English really did a number, didn't they?
The English are crazy. You know?
Like, wild.
The English are insane. Like, all they do is eat, like, toast with beans on it and, like, tea.
Ew, they do?
Yes. Have you ever seen, like, English food?
No.
Good.
Besides, like, tea and crumpets.
Yeah. No, like
and scones.
Like, everything they eat is, like, tan. Mm. It's just, like, slop. Like, pull up to the trough and, like, that's the vibe.
So they were, like, fucking up Ireland, all these families, these farmers. So a secret society was formed called the Molly Maguires.
Love.
And they started retaliating against these landowners, running around, like, destroying property, maybe murder.
Maybe, like, burning crops.
But, like, these are, like, you know, you got the tough Irish.
Yeah. It's Spider-Man. It's Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
I can't do it.
I practice a little. Only that, like, the I turns into oi. Uh-huh. Ireland. That's pretty good.
That's good.
Okay.
All right. So you have mass vigilantes running around tonight, right, burning the village.
So in a newspaper, an address of Molly Maguire to her children, which I think is so adorable. Like, as if there's, like, a leader of this group of farmers, containing 12 rules. The rules advised Mollies about how they should conduct themselves in land disputes and were an attempt to direct the movement's activities. So, number one, keep strictly to the land question by allowing no landlord more than fair value for his tenure, which I don't really know what that means. I think that means, like, don't you go outside of those bounds and give him anything outside of that. No rent to be paid until harvest. Love. I don't know if it's worth it to go through all these, but, you know, assist to the utmost of your power the good landlord in getting his rents. Love that. Cherish and respect the good landlord and good agent. Keep from traveling by night. So he's just being like, guys, calm down. Everybody calm down.
He's like, hey.
We all have the same goal here.
So let's not get out of hand.
Yeah.
Let's target our passion instead of just running around.
So this was the situation in Ireland. So now the potato famine has caused a lot of people to migrate to the U.S. In the U.S., you know, they faced a lot of discrimination. The only jobs that were willing to hire them were the coal mining jobs in Pennsylvania.
Right.
So we got the president of these coal mining companies, Franklin B. Goin.
And Franklin B. Goin to jail.
I named him Franklin the Bitch Goin. Franklin the Bitch Goin to jail.
Right.
So let's talk about these coal mining jobs. All coal miners had to, like, explode the rocks in order to, like, find the coal. And then they had to create structures to keep it from caving in, these, like, caves. And then they had to create these, like, little rail lines to, like, hurdle.
Yee-ho, my ho. Like,
they didn't get paid for those hours. They only got paid for the coal that they, like, got, which sometimes they didn't get any. They lived in company-owned towns. The companies leased the housing to the men and their families and would pay them in fake money, where they could only purchase shit from shops also owned by the company.
It's like Disneyland.
Yeah, but like you're trapped.
But it's like
you
horrific.
Can't leave because your money doesn't like work for the buses or whatever.
So you're literally
the trains.
A slave.
You're a slave, yeah. Okay, so then you have these Irishmen, these tough guys.
They're like covered in dirt.
They sent letters to the employers and they said, if you don't fix shit, we're going to murder you.
Okay.
Legend has it, basically, that these letters were sent by the Molly Maguires.
Mm.
They're back in town.
So these Molly Maguires are international. And she's like, I got you, babies. Rest your tired, coal-covered faces in mommy's bosom. And I'm going to do the dirty work for you.
And I feel like whether or not the name was there, the spirit was there.
The spirit was there.
The spirit of rage.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so basically, like, the rich men, the employers.
No, that's fine.
Sorry.
We're not at work or anything.
Where was I?
So they're like, oh! all like eating clams.
So they were basically like, listen, we're going to murder you if you don't change shit and fix shit right now. Uh-huh. Because they also like were dying.
I like that a lot.
I like that a lot too.
Like, I like that it's not like, I want a pay raise. It's like, you will be murdered.
Yeah. And so then the employees were like, yeah. Like, they're not going to murder us. Like, they're not going to fucking, what do they think? They're going to come out here and murder us? Yeah. And the Irishman, the Molly Maguires, were like, yeah. And that's what they did.
Oh my God. I would pay to see that. Aren't you so proud? Yes. Like, I'm picturing like, like they're sitting down having like bingo night. Like, ooh.
I can imagine the Irishman like running around outside.
And I just picture them like covered in coal dust, barreling through the window.
Right.
And like, there was a couple moments when the bodies hit the floor where they were in their house, and I guarantee they drank their wine and laughed and tried on their clothes, you know? Like,
I don't, it's the Irish. I don't think that they were like, we just murdered someone.
No, they were like, hey! They were like pints, like clinking.
So then Franklin the Bitch Gowan hired an Irishman. He's playing dirty now. He's like, you want to play dirty? Bitch, I'm the dirtiest player. I started the game of dirty playing. And he did, because he really murdered them first. I feel like they weren't the first to murder the Irish, the Molly Maguires.
Yeah, because...
because they were dying in the coal mines.
They were dying in the mines.
Okay, so they hired an Irishman named James McParland to betray his own kind and go undercover as James McKenna. So we're going to call him James the Cunt McKenna.
Okay.
Because, like, there's no worse thing than,
going
like,
against your own people.
Making them think you've got the accent, you might have red hair, you're going to really go in there and make them think.
Maybe you have liver damage, sunspots.
This bitch literally went and worked for the coal mines for 2 years.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's how, like, into this he got, and convincing them that he's one of them.
Like, don't you have hobbies?
I know. So he became convinced that these Working Man's Benevolent Association and a fraternity of Irish Catholics, they're just, like, a couple of groups. He becomes convinced that they're actually Molly Maguire's. But, like, it doesn't really matter. I feel like this is a weird conspiracy that he's come up with in his mind. Number one, they just changed the name. It's still like the spirit of the Molly Maguires, I think. But like, what does the difference make? Are you trying to get investigating murders or not here? Anyways, so as he comes to this conclusion, Franklin the Bitch Gowan has decided to issue a 20% pay cut to all the miners. So then these miners, they're like, fuck you. And they go on strike.
Uh-huh. The spirit of the Molly
And then the leaders of the union and the fraternity started being assassinated.
One by one, they were dropping like flies.
Murders of the supposed Mollies continued. And so the miners began making plans of revenge killing. So you have a little back and forth here.
There's a little volley.
Right.
It's like
of
a
death.
Death. Yeah.
So the way that it ends is this. James the Cunt McKenna, now in his true forms, James the Cunt McParland, took this opportunity to accuse 20 men of murder, arson, and kidnapping.
What in the Salem witch trial?
Most of these men were hanged. To this day, there is still no evidence besides James the Cunt McParland's testimony that these men were guilty. And to this day, historians debate whether the Molly Maguires even existed at all. They existed in Ireland.
Right.
In Ireland. Mm-hmm. But, like, did they exist in Pennsylvania? We'll never know. But, like, yeah, in spirit they did.
Ooh.
Like, whether or not they called themselves, I feel like that's a weird thing.
It was, like, the rebirth uh-huh. of the Molly Maguires.
Right, right. So this is, like, really just to set the tone a little bit. We have another situation that's a little bit more connected to HR.
So this is, like, uh-huh. So this is, like... this is like, this is the rage building up.
Right.
This is the need for HR forming mm-hmm. at its roots.
So now we're going to move down to the coal mines in southern Colorado.
Colorado.
This one's owned by the Rockefellers. The Rockefellers sent recruiters to Italy, Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia, Germany, France, and Greece because they figure if they don't know each other's languages and cultures,
they can get away with murder.
Right. They're not going to like rise up against them. Like, they're just not going to be able to do it, even if they wanted to. So, you know, the same.
So the Rockefellers are like, bring me some poor foreigners now. before lunch.
And it makes me sad because they were like promised a lot. Like they went there and they were like, there's riches and work. Uh-huh. And they left their like families and their communities thinking that like better.
They heard the streets were paved with gold. Lana mm-hmm. Del Rey was going to like welcome them with open arms. Yeah. Tempest tossed.
Okay. So now this one, same thing. We've got some bad conditions. I got a couple quotes for this one. Little boy says, Mother, I don't want to go into the dark hole. I'm afraid. I'll do anything if I don't have to work there. This is another one. Trapped for hours in a dark mine behind a stubborn mule, young Victor missed dinner and didn't get home until very late at night. Then he realized no one noticed he was missing. Victor reflected on this coal mine experience. People was worth nothing. A mule was worth everything. And they actually were worth more than the miners. Because it was harder to replace them than it was the miners.
Wow.
You got your company towns. And this is sort of like a little bit like North Korea vibes. They could only read company approved literature. Only watch company approved movies. Corporate administrators. Ew, like once you... Corporate's been around since then.
That's disgusting.
Corporate administrators encourage workers' children to embrace company approved values. Company schools teach students to be obedient workers and patriotic Americans.
This is a big deal.
Isn't that like so like...
Ugh. Like, I know I'm uneducated.
It's like we had like, a little bit of a North Korea situation.
A lot of bit.
Yeah.
Like, damn.
Like they secluded them in these towns and like owns them.
Yeah.
Okay, so here we go. We got the notable bad bitch of Herstory. Her name was Mother Jones.
Ooh.
Her actual name is Mary Harris. She's an Irish immigrant. She considered all oppressed workers her children, which is so cute.
That is really cute.
She rallied mother and children into leading protests and strikes against employers on the behalf of the miners. Her vibe was getting thrown in jail at 80.
I love her.
And she would just like go back out and like keep protesting. Like she didn't give a shit. Like that was all she did. A quote by her is, if you're afraid to fight, we'll get the woman to fight for you and beat the hell out of the mine owners.
Yes.
Isn't that so adorable?
She's Mama Bear. With the claws out.
And then we get the strike of 1913. So now we're getting into the early 1900s.
Right. We're in a post-Titanic world.
The important thing is what they were demanding, which was the enforcement of Colorado's mine safety law. So there were laws. But they just
got away with it.
And then the mine owners saw this attack on their right to private property. But it's like,
well, are
these people your property?
Yeah.
Okay, so they were willing to go to war to protect the right to run their mines however they saw fit. The coal miners go on strike. And then because of this, because they're like, like you don't get to tell us how we run our mines. They kick them out of their homes. So then they trudge into the mud into an open prairie and just set up tents with the help of like a union nearby. So they have this like colony of tent cities or whatever where they start to like live, which is badass, I feel like.
Yeah.
They're like, we're just gonna live the old fashioned way. They're as like hunter gatherers.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm gonna mind my business. I'm not gonna mine your coal.
So they had like a little town, like a little community there. Like the tents were lined like streets. They had a community tent where they got their meals, they planned their strike activities.
They had a little supper, a little mm-hmm. volleyball.
They did. They actually played baseball.
I love that.
On time off. Whenever there wasn't a snowstorm, because they made it, they stayed for a while. PR was involved in this. Reporters were on this. So America was watching. And they purposely put up a medical tent so that like the reporters could see that more obviously. Because at the time they were seen as dangerous savages. And I don't know if they were seen as dangerous savages because like they were foreigners or because they were laborers or because they were strikers.
They were just like poor homeless people and they're like,
yeah, they were danger. Just violent. Yeah. And at first they were kicked out and then the Rockefellers hired gunmen to raid the tent colonies. And they did kill people, but like they didn't like disperse. They refused to disperse. And they lasted through the winter of this, of like them killing them and like sort of just this back and forth. And they would like, their way of striking would to be to like go into town and destroy company property. And like they would attempt to, any strike breakers, like people who kept going to work, they would try to like stop them from working because they were like, fuck you, bitch. You're not standing with us or whatever. And then the Rockefellers started to panic because then shit wasn't getting done. You know, like the whatever coal was
their
used.
Their coal's not being mined. So they have to rebuild the bakery. So basically these are elves.
So they're starting to panic. Their gunmen aren't working. And then so they had the governor called the National Guard. The National Guard is a state-based military that can be called upon to respond to a variety of emergencies and conflicts. And when the National Guard showed up to the tent colonies, they got all excited. They were like, oh, shit. Yeah. Like, they literally were like chanting for them. Like, they felt like they were like being relieved. They felt like the government was coming to their side, to their aid. But the National Guard was actually being paid for by the Rockefellers.
So over the hill they come and they see a hero in shining armor. Yeah. As they get closer, they realize.
And then they come in and they try to disperse the strikers. Same with violence, same thing. And then there's like throughout the winter, this back and forth of violence. Okay, so what do we got next? Notable poppy of history.
Damn, hold
his
on.
Name is his name is Louis Tikas. He's a Greek fella. Mm. He represented the Greeks there. It's called Ludlow or Ludlow, by the way.
The town?
The little tent colony. Mm. Or maybe the area where the tent colony was. So he was a leader. He organized strikes. He was peaceful. And then just a note on the Greeks, they were really tough guys because they were veterans from the Greek army who defended against Turkey back in the day for them. They were tough guys.
Mm-hmm. Like, hey, yo, it's like.
They were really scary guys, but then Louis, Poppy Louis, mm-hmm. he cared about keeping the peace.
He's a peacemaker.
He's a peacemaker. But then.
He's a tough guy, but he's a peacemaker mm-hmm. and he's a softie at the end of the day.
Right. Spring 1914. Tensions have grown throughout the winter.
They've spent the winter. They're tired. They're cold. They're frustrated. Mm-hmm. Their people are dying.
Both sides are armed and ready to go. Mm-hmm. April 19th. Was the Greek Easter. So they're partying, they're dancing, they have a little like a village.
They're having
thing.
A little baklava.
Spring. Yeah.
A little spinacopita.
The trees are growing back. Like it's the air is fresh again. Like they're not like.
There's like a rejoice, a celebration of life.
Right. Cause they're living in tents. So like they had to like sleep in like winter outside in tents. So like now they.
Hibernation's
don't have to do
over,
that.
Mama. You
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm. And like now it's like they could just like farm for themselves, I feel like, if they wanted to.
They can make bugatza. Like they're happy.
They're having a good time. Even like it's. Said that like the National Guard were playing baseball with them. Like
it was a kiki.
Like they were just standing around. They were like, all right, the vibes are good. We're not gonna.
They're like, we came over here to kill you guys. They're like, yeah, seem pretty cool. Hold on.
But then the next day, so the vibes were good. But the next day, Poppy Louis goes to meet with the National Guard. Plans meeting. He goes there. Killed on sight. And now he's this leader for the strikers. Like, they look up to him. He's this man of wisdom.
He's their messiah.
Right. And now they're pissed off.
I'd be pissed.
At this point, the National Guard is completely replaced by guards who also work as mine guards for the company. I don't really know what that means, but basically that just means like the company had the National Guard is like way more on the side of the company.
The ones that were playing baseball are gone, and now it's daddy.
They're like, I think they were just like fucking with them and making them feel like it was like they were chilling and that things were peaceful. But I think probably ultimately, like now that the spring was around and they got through, they survived the winter, like it was gonna be much harder to disperse the strike than before. So like, cause now like people could really, I feel like, just like survive out there. But so I think they came to like, they panicked, or not that they panicked, but they like they went to the ultimate thing. There was something called the Death Special, where an armored car used by private detectives that had a machine gun mounted on the back of it would drive through the tent cities just firing randomly. And then they set lights outside the tent colonies to flash over them at night. This was sort of, I think...
Psychological torture.
Psychological torture, yeah. This was sort of like leading up. The Death Special, that was sort of happening during the winter. And so was like the lights at night. But then, we have Easter. They're having a good time. Anyways, next day, Poppy's dead. Battle begins. They're fighting. The National Guard starts setting the tents aflame. This is their way of being like, this is it. Like, we're done.
They're like, you're dying.
Okay, so in this particular battle on April 20, 13 people died, 11 children and 2 women underneath a burning tent.
Wait, how many people died?
On this day, 13. Actually, 14, including Poppy Louis.
I have more sangria.
Yeah.
Wait, stop. God.
Where is it even?
Oh, I have it. So daddy's dead.
Daddy's dead.
11 little boys and girls are dead.
Yeah. The strikers are pissed. So now they just go into the company towns. They start murdering, destroying shit.
The strikers are like, no more Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah.
Like, Poppy's not here to be like, peaceful protest.
Yeah, that's
they're like,
true.
We're murdering, bitch.
He wasn't
like,
there.
Gandhi's gone, Mary.
Right,
we're coming
like,
in
he
with
was
guns.
There to calm everyone down. And now they just killed him. So they're like, all right, that's how you want to play?
How you want to play? Then we'll fucking play this game.
Chaos ensues in the companies. And that's when President Wilson calls the military in. And it's the military that ends the whole thing finally. And they basically, they fail. However, let's see, let's look at the aftermath here. We get a slogan called Remember Ludlow by the whole country. Because everybody was watching.
We forgot.
We forgot.
We didn't remember Ludlow.
We did, because I don't remember learning about it.
Never heard
history.
Of Ludlow.
Yeah. This became a turning point in the history of labor rights and labor unions.
Yeah, because they don't teach us that kind of stuff.
You have to, like, just, I feel like saying something's a turning point is just a way to make it feel a little bit better, right? When somebody failed, when the people that you wanted to win fail, it's just, at least they're a turning point.
It's a turning point.
So the one who was running the show was Rockefeller's son.
It's always the fucking son. It's always the snotty, bratty little Nepo baby.
It's always that one. So now he's dealing with PR to help him with his now damaged image.
He's like, oh, my reputation, daddy.
Yeah.
It's ruined.
Daddy Rockefeller now has to go to Ludlow. He has to go to Colorado to see what the deal is. See the scene, talk to the people, whatever, get the gist of everything. So he implements, this I think is important in the part of the human resources. Daddy Rockefeller implements a company union. So this is an organization of workers created by and working for the company. It's not a real union. It's a company union. But that's his way of like sort of mending the issue. I love this statement. People in the country saw this as a creature of management.
Ooh.
Right? Like a creature. And that's what
so
HR
people,
is.
People have known for a lot since the birth.
Mm-hmm.
People have known since the birth.
They tried to cover it up. Even then, it was an illusion, a company mm-hmm. union.
They were like, oh, all these people are murdered and blah, blah, blah. But like, don't worry. We are, we're HR.
Right.
We're a union. We're a family here. It's the bag of pretzels.
Oh, it's the
room temp lemonade. Like, this is the birthplace.
Uh-huh. It's always been that way. And I feel like that's where our natural instincts are seeing the depth of the truth
There's
of it.
There's generational trauma there that's yeah. pointing us to steer clear from HR.
Yeah. I love this creature of management. It's mm-hmm. just like...
It's like a manic smile. It's a blonde bob haircut.
So that was sort of a failure. That like just the term company union as a thing. That kind of failed.
They were like, no, mama. They were like, Wilson...
Because everyone was watching. At this point, everybody was watching. There were like a lot of protests throughout the country, like people being like, fuck you, Rock. So there was like, even back then, there were people on the streets like in like New York. There were people outside his house like today. I feel like people being outside of Trump Towers sort of vibes, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Like there were people who were like, because originally the newspaper, the press was like, they're savages. And then I feel like people were like, you know, the rights movement sort of kicked
in. Right. Their propaganda wasn't working anymore.
I watched a documentary. This guy's name is Vincent C. DeBacca. I just want to say a quote from him because I thought that it is very timeless. The balance between labor and capital has always been tipped in favor of laws and protections for capital. And I felt like this is the difference between labor unions and HR, is that like there needs to be a middleman because companies are so big and sometimes people never meet the owner of the company. You know, you have all these factions and like bureaucratic levels. So I feel like the difference between like a labor union is that like that middleman doesn't work for the company.
So there's no like allegiance, or it's a third party coming in, so there's no bias.
HR is a version of a middleman, but they work for the company. Like that's the difference, I feel like.
There's no boots on the ground there.
There's none of that. It's just like, hi, we're HR.
It's like, oh,
we're going to talk about sexual harassment training. Everyone gather in the office.
My pronouns are.
Ew.
It's traumatic.
I feel like it's really hot in here. I feel like should we take a break, turn it on?
Take a little break, regroup. We're going to take a quick break. Don't forget to like and subscribe.
We are rolling. We're back. We just took a bit of a break.
Yes.
And we have to find our way mentally and emotionally back to...
We wanted to take a little break to reset the air conditioning, maybe have a little drink of water. We ended up having the rest of that bottle of sangria and watched 3 episodes of Couples Therapy, which is the best show on...
Brilliant, by the way.
Out right now. It's the best show out. Anywho.
All right. So where were we? We just ended the strike. It's the early 1900s.
Right.
We're addressing now the working conditions and the welfare. Eek! I'm not as organized as I should be.
Like Holly says through her purple teeth.
Okay, this is weird. This is a weird one. In the 1920s, the introduction of scientific management principles focusing on efficiency and, I highlighted this, productivity in the workplace. So I feel like there's sort of a mending going from the welfare of the worker. They're mending this department, which was created sort of to just...
Huh?
So this department of... It's not called HR yet, sort of the company, the...
A new middleman attempt.
The middleman, yeah. So it's now sort of being mended into something that's not about the welfare of the workers. It's about the efficiency of the worker.
Mm-hmm.
How do we set up an environment so that the worker is more productive?
It's like, let's give them breaks so that they can work longer shifts. Right. Like that kind of manipulation.
So some bitch named Frederick Taylor... known as the father of scientific management. Never heard that term, don't like it.
So we don't like Frederick.
So he played a huge role in the development of the personnel department. So I guess in the early 1900s, we're calling it the personnel department. He advocated the scientific selection and training of workers.
That sounds crazy. Okay. That sounds like Darwinism. Yeah. That sounds wild.
It sounds like
breeding...
Right. We're literally just like machine parts. How do you make the machine parts just like function better? The key principles is this in his scientific management thing. Using the scientific method to determine the most efficient way to work, matching workers to a task they are suited for, proactively monitoring performance and providing feedback, allocating planning tasks to managers so workers focus on the task at hand. That is so familiar to me. Everything in this. And it's not that bad. It's not that bad. Okay, so then now we have this thing of, in the 1920s, the department, this middleman department, they're gaining new responsibilities. Hiring, evaluating, training, and compensating. World War One comes around, rolls around.
Rosie the Riveter is like,
Right, there's a labor shortage. So this is sort of a department becomes this thing of like hiring is becomes their big thing.
We need more cogs in the machine.
Yeah. And if we're going to do this work, make this work the best, we need specific cogs for specific parts. Who's this got has, more muscle here?
Right. This one has little hands. We'll make her reach in the thing.
Exactly that. Exactly. So they're looking at what jobs fit what people. So they're taking a big role in that.
It's like when you're getting a dog and they're like, this breed is good with children.
Mm-hmm. So now the Depression rolls around.
Hey.
New laws have come in place. Laws encouraging fair pay, safe working conditions. We're getting some of the first drafted employee handbooks. World War II comes around, we go the same situation. There's less workers, HR comes in. Not HR, but like, you know, the department of whatever. This middleman department. Then the 1960s and 1970s is a turning point because the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Equal Employment Opportunity Act of 1972, now you've got all these new obligations where if failed to meet the obligations, companies will receive stiff penalties. So like now this is where you start to see like, you know, like HR coming into this tone of like workplace practices so that they don't receive those penalties, you know, where you have like the sexual harassment training at that point, like sexual harassment training, I don't believe is like around at this time. But like, you know, that tone probably like they start to get more involved in that because this is now the new threat. Whereas like the threat before was like work unions and stuff like that and welfare, like actual like physical conditions. Now we're talking about civil rights. And so like now it's like they're shifting into making sure that companies don't get sued for whatever.
For civil rights issues.
Exactly. Yeah. And then from there it developed. It was coined like you thought earlier. You said what, 1980s?
Remember I feel when like you I said 70s something?
Well, the 1980s is when like human resources, like the term.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But so it's been like sort of like slowly developing.
It's gone. It's like it found a new name and address. But it's been this long festering middleman thing for a long time.
So anyways, oh, and then I have a Reddit time here.
Reddit time?
Reddit time. Reddit time!
Oh, it's a segment! Reddit time!
Reddit time!
Reddit time! Y'all, bruh. It's Reddit time!
Do-do-da!
A-boo-do-ba-ta-ta.
Someone asked, is human resources becoming the worst job? This is partially so difficult because I feel like I'm whining, which I should just be grateful I have a decent paying job. Please don't comment to make me feel worse. I already agree.
It's already so HR. Like, it's so HR.
It's like, remember, we've talked about this. This has been a theme.
Let's break it down because we are coming from a place where our whole lives we've dealt with HR. I'm assuming everyone deals with HR. But, you know, we're talking about the facade, the illusion. We've gone through the history. We're talking about present day. Now we're talking about
present day HR. Right, yes.
We're talking about, let's make sure our ducks are in order.
And
we're crossing our T's, dotting our I's.
We have this issue, I think. It's a common theme in our brand, in our podcast, of not being able to speak the truth. And this person is so afraid working in the HR. They're so afraid of speaking the
because
truth.
Because that's their whining. Whole thing.
They're not allowed to whine. They have to smile and everything's good.
No, they're shackled. They're shackled by the pressures of, like, you know how we always say if you stay canceled, you don't got to get canceled. They live. They live, eat and breathe cancel culture.
They said, please don't comment to make me feel worse. I already agree with you. They already hate themselves.
They hate themselves. They're a shell. They look in the mirror every single day and see nothing. They're shackled down by who they've become.
Okay, so they continue. This field requires you to be doing everything at once. In reality, you control finances, future success, hiring, firing, legal compliance, employee relation, and so many other things. I have no idea how this can be sustainable as a department. I have worked at 3 different companies where this is the case. I have done jobs where I was the only one in the department and where I've been in a team of 7. I end up feeling constantly burnt out. I actually like working and I work hard, taking work very seriously. So it's not for trying, but I tend to have high work stress. Most days feel like I feel like a job shouldn't feel like this. I don't feel like a person anymore. I feel like a machine at work, which is the opposite of why I chose this career. I wanted to become the change I wanted to see in the workplace. Turns out I'm just as much of a grouch at work as everyone else. Sorry for complaining.
Sorry for existing.
They're not allowed to complain. They're not allowed to speak their truth. Secondly, this is alarming, I think, a little, because if HR is supposed to be this middle man that's like keeping everything together, clearly they're now HR is becoming the thing
that they're afraid of.
It's blending into the rest of the workforce that needs to be protected.
Mm-hmm.
And who's not that HR is there to protect the employees, it's there to protect the company, but like at least through law, because of like laws that exist in the government, HR is there to make sure that those laws happen so that the company doesn't get sued. But now it's like the HR seems like they're falling apart. So no one's enforcing the rules that they're there to enforce. So
the company's just abusing their employees and getting away with it because HR is like a mess.
So then, yeah.
Which we've seen firsthand.
And so HR is way too afraid to stand up to the company. And like the rest of the employees are like poor and they're struggling and they don't have like the means or the resources or the energy to file a lawsuit, you know? So no one's going to get justice in this scenario.
But here's your Dixie cup of warm lemonade.
Employee of the month. Here's a $20 gift card to Amazon.
We got employee of the month things. They were like, we're boosting morale. Ah! First of all, I feel like what I'm good at more than anything on this planet is boosting motherfucking morale. You know, that's got to be on my pay grade.
With some comedy.
Because I walk around this place. Yes, I'm a bartender. Sure. I make good drinks. I'm good at what I do. I'm a mixologist. I have passion. It's an art form. But first and foremost, what I do is I bring joy to the people around me. Period. I boost morale. You don't boost morale. And there's always this facade and this bullshit about their little cookie cutter, little pizza. Shut the fuck up. Like, you know.
Yeah.
You don't boost morale.
Yeah, you don't.
I boost morale and then you get on my case. You get on my case because I'm unprofessional.
No, all you do is you step into the room and you create goosebumps. Hair is going up on people's necks.
People are triggered going into fight or flight mode.
Right, literally.
And you're like, we're doing employee of the month. So then we did that. We did employee of the month. And then the employee of the months were promised a bonus in their pay, blah, blah, blah. Never got it. Not a single one of them.
For real?
Not a single one of them got it.
Oh, shit.
Some of them have kids. They all complained to me. You know, they needed this.
Oh, my God.
One of them was like, all I wanted was to just take home my certificate that I was employee of the month so I could hang it on my fridge for my daughter to see. Or for my son to see. And they didn't even give me that. They didn't give me the pay. They didn't give me the pay raise. God.
Dude, no.
It's like, all a facade.
The place that Michael works, we could sue the fuck out of them, I swear to God. And I've been wanting to talk about them, and I won't use their name because Michael's afraid of getting sued for slander or whatever. Yeah. We're not lawyers here in Apartment 1R. But,
no, it pisses me off. Because, like, I'll be, like, laughing loud. I'm loud. I'm laughing. I'm cursing. And my bosses are like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Michael, don't curse. Don't say that. Lower your voice. Lower your voice. There's guests around. There's guests. I'm like, yeah, the guests see me right now and I'm laughing. They love it. Like, I'm laughing with them, you know? But they're just, the stick is so far up their ass, they're choking on it. HR, we're boosting morale. We have to boost morale. I'm like, can we start with turning the air conditioning on in the middle of the summer? This is what I hate about corporations and corporate.
Like, this is the best thing about like working at like local community places is that you're allowed to become a family. They don't want you to.
Yeah.
Oh my God! It's like the coal mines. Yeah, they don't want you to be a family. They don't want you to get close to each other. They don't want you to communicate with each other.
No,
so you don't rise up. So you don't rise up against.
Literally,
them.
Me and my coworker, hi Chili, we're literally laughing. Like we were. There was no customers, and we were just sitting there laughing. And our boss came up to us angry that we were laughing. To this day, I just like can't wrap my head around like why that would be a thing.
No, they don't want people to get close to each other because then there can be an uprising.
Mm-hmm.
So they have these other ways of manipulating us.
Like separating.
Different departments.
Cutting our hours together.
Yes, cutting our hours together. I have that situation happening.
All under this facade of like, we care about boosting morale. We're a family here. We're a family. And then you actually like are a family with your coworkers and like do have good morale and they punish you for it.
Right.
They don't want the reality. They want the facade.
They
want the guests to come by and for you to be like, quick little inside joke. Turn to guests. Do you want to be invited in this? You can have a little bit of this inside joke if you get the 9-ounce pour of our Pinot Grigio. Like that's what they want. They don't want reality. They're afraid of reality. They're shackled. They're they're trembling with fear. Their skin goosebumps from head to toe.
Someone said this is funny. Someone said this. This is on a different Reddit post. Someone asked the question, what is it like being in HR? And then someone replied, I would urge you to reconsider HR unless you are a useless parasite that's a horrible human being.
I love that.
Me too. But like, it's
big
like,
shout
wanna...
out to my friend Didi who works in HR.
Oh, my bad, Didi.
And I know you're listening.
I'm sorry, Didi.
He told me he listens.
I'm sorry.
But it's okay.
I'm not coming for you.
No.
I'm coming for the owners.
No, the thing is, he's just in his bag.
What does that mean?
Like, he's just focused on getting his money and that's it.
Oh, is that the new term these days with you kids? He's in his bag means he wants money.
Like, he's in his purse. Like,
and yeah, I'm not coming for you. I'm just like.
No. I'm coming for the whole system.
Yeah, we're coming for the coal miner owners. We're coming for the Rockefellers.
We are the Maguire. We're the Lizzie McGuire.
Oh my God, we're the Molly Maguires. Oh my God, we're the current day Molly Maguires.
This is what delusion looks like firsthand. Like these people were like famished, war-ridden,
I know.
Vigilantes, and we're like sitting in a New York City air-conditioned apartment with microphones.
Your dad, if he was a Molly Maguire.
No, Holly fetishizes my Irish heritage like every single day of my life.
Well, it's like, you gotta just, like, appreciate the history of it. I'm American.
No, we're American.
Fuck
and we,
yeah.
No, me and Holly identify as American, not in, like, a America, make America great again kind of way, but
it's
because
like,
we refuse to
we
be
are.
Delusional. Like, right. We are from New York. We're
so
American.
Delusional that we refuse to be delusional.
We're so delusional that we just, like, absolutely can't handle claiming to be Italian right now, you
right.
know?
Like, even though I'm, like, forcing the Irish on Michael as we speak. Do you feel like that?
No,
but it's just like it's just like you are and we're talking about it.
It's my people.
It's
my
your
culture.
People. No, we're American. Because yeah. I feel like we
if McNally, McNelson, whoever, like the Warriors from back then that we
the
were
Molly
talking
Maguires.
About. Yeah, if they If they heard some faggot in apartment 1R being like, that's no, but, my people. No, I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding.
You know what?
Kidding.
Besides that, besides like whatever, whoever we are, whoever we identify as, it doesn't matter like country wise. It matters worker wise.
Right. Because like that's in my blood. So like I could get it the fuck out right now and start barking at my manager.
Right. I feel like,
and it'll be like the ghosts of the Molly Maguires on my shoulders, like the ancestors. Uh-huh.
And I also feel like we come from a blue collar family, both of us. Mm-hmm. So we come from a people who would need to rise against the owners sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
And now here we are, suffocated under corporate.
I hate it. So here in apartment 1R,
we feel the spirit of the Molly Maguires.
We feel the spirit of them for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to rise up with them.
All right, let's see what else we got here on Reddit time.
Reddit time. We got to work on that.
I am only in my mid-20s and I work for two big global companies. HR, IMO, depletes so much of my energy. No matter how many boundaries you put in place, it's just exhausting. I cry at least once a week. I know so many people who are just as tired. That's the one. I cry at least once a week. I find myself constantly bringing my work home with me and being a bitch not only at work, but home too.
No, me. HR. Like, I like look around because I'm sitting here being like, I boost morale and I bring light to people. When in reality, it's probably me half of the time being like, I can't fucking believe I still work here. This place is a piece of shit. You want to hear what they did to me today? You want to hear what they did
sometimes
to me today?
Sometimes I'm literally walking down the sidewalk and I'm like, I'm living my trauma right now. Ooh, this one's fun. Someone writes, pros, recruiting and growing employees. It's great to find someone that's a good fit for an open job and when we watch them grow and excel over time. I hate that word excel. Mm-hmm. Shut up. If you're at a company long enough, eventually you're the person that has hired everyone. Cons, you know all the skeletons. I'm like, ooh, that's the tea.
There's some tea.
It's like, that's the pro to me, I feel like. Yeah. I'm the opposite here. Cons,
yeah,
you know
cons
all the skeletons.
Is like excelling in the thing. The pros you know is you get the gossip.
You get the gossip. You know about the guy who slapped a female's ass. You know about the handful of employees that have a domestic abuse charges, but they were long enough ago that they were eligible to be hired. You know how much everyone makes. This can honestly be fine if things are structured well and teammates make equal pay. When that's not the case, .. you know.
Like she's a little sassy.
I would say the worst is when you know one boss makes more than double his second in command, but the second in command does all the work. And lastly, you're the one that does the layoffs or has to serve as a witness to the firings. That sucks. I would still rank laying off hardworking people as some of the worst moments of my life. Yeah, all right, I'll give you that one. But like the other shit, the tea?
Like that's the...
That to me would be the positive.
Like
the
I almost feel like you
it.
And me need to shift this podcast. Like we need to go GoPro. We need to work for HR and do investigative journalism.
Yeah.
From the inside.
We wouldn't survive.
Not a day. Not one day.
I feel like
I would go in
like
and make
some
a
level of white
joke.
Trash that you cannot, yeah. You cannot remove from a person.
Yeah. Like you could take the trash. I don't know. I don't even know. like,
listen, you can give a girl cash. She'll always be white trash.
Right.
So, yeah. So that's a history of HR a little bit. I hope. Did you learn something today?
No. No, I'm kidding. I did. No, it was fun.
So
before we go, Holly, what do you love?
Okay. I love. I'm so excited for this one. I love the phrase. I love. Like so much. I think this is like the best phrase that ever was made.
Uh-huh.
Not to hype it up or anything, but I just love the phrase, the shit hit the fan. I love it so much.
I love it too. Like I never gave it its flowers before. Like I've said it, I've heard it plenty of times.
The visual is so real.
Because that's exactly what happens. Like you take a piece of shit and you throw it and it hits a moving fan and it spurts and just explodes all over the room.
Like you hear it.
Like it has like a like the shit hits the fan. It's like spraying up
and
the
like,
wall with diarrhea.
It's so accurate to life sometimes. You say the shit hit the fan like like it's getting everywhere, and it's just there.
Because it's like the shit, because when you use the phrase, the shit hit the fan, it's implied that the shit and the fan had already existed for quite some time, right. You know? But it's the meeting point. It's like everything finally just came together and exploded.
It's such an important metaphor.
It really is.
Like, oh, I can envision it, like... My question is too, like, how would you envision, like, the shit getting there?
I'm picturing an oscillating, like, I'm not picturing a ceiling fan. I'm picturing an oscillating, like, standing floor.
Oh, I was picturing a ceiling fan.
I'm picturing, like, a floor standing oscillating fan.
Oh, God, and it's just and circulating it's just, throughout
and you
the room.
Throw a piece of shit on it, and it's, like, just, like, spitting diarrhea all over the walls and ceiling.
I was picturing it on the ceiling, like somehow like a poopy bag or something gets thrown at the fan and it's just spraying all over the room, like raining shit.
I love that. Yeah, I think that's really important. Really important. And I think that it's time that that phrase gets its flowers.
Uh-huh. Like when some shit goes down, the shit hit the fan. Like the worst possible thing. Uh-huh. And like
we were gambling by throwing shit, but like it hit the fan.
It hit the fan. One move, and utter chaos. Like, how did somebody come even to that state of mind?
You took a piece of shit and threw it at a fan.
They had to like have visually thought about that.
I love that.
Right? So that's what I love.
I love that too. I really do. I really am happy about
that. Like, there's a lot of beauty, I think, in that.
There is.
The shit hit the fan.
Like, it's like 2 hours worth of like HR debacles and like mm-hmm. human suffering. But like, it's okay because we also live in the same timeline as the phrase, the shit hit the fan.
Right.
So some things work out. There's little victories all around us.
So yeah, this was our first, you guys don't know this. This is our first time in the studio.
Oh, right. Yeah, some changes are happening around here, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
We're in our studio, which by now you guys have seen over on our Instagram, perturbed.podcast. That's perturbed.podcast. We post some pictures. We have some fun in the comments over there. You could always DM us if you want us to talk about something that perturbs you. So Instagram's always a fun, safe place to do that. Again, that's perturbed.podcast. So yeah, we're in the studio today.
So yeah, that's a big move for us. And
getting our shit together.
We're getting our shit together. It's not hitting the fan.
No, it's
right now. It's secured.
Like picture the shit hitting the fan, and then playing that footage in reverse.
In reverse,
it's
right.
The shit collecting and migrating away from the fan.
Right. So yeah. So I hope you guys are having a good day.
Maybe you're on the way to work and you want to stop and get a quick iced coffee, an iced latte. Maybe you work
at
HR.
Maybe you want a slice of pizza. If you work in HR and you just...
Maybe all you want is a room temp Dixie cup of lemonade and a quarter of a slice of pizza and a paper plate.
You have that.
And there's a time and a place for that, I think.
And you know what? Don't feel judged. If that's what makes you happy, you fucking eat that slice of pizza and you drink out of that Dixie cup.
And I know you. And you're damping paper towel on that little fourth of a slice of pizza.
Maybe if you really want to and you're alone, just like squeeze the Dixie cup, squeeze all mm-hmm. the liquid out of the Dixie cup, like suck on it.
Yeah, suckle on that room temp sugar cup.
Because there's liquid still left in the Dixie cup.
Yeah, because it'll like absorb a little. Right. Unless it has that like waxy kind of grainy like film on it.
Just suck on that too. Get some of that in there.
It's fine. You know, make candles.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, you're right. On the outside of it.
And on the inside.
Oh.
Right?
I don't know. I can't really totally remember the Dixie cups.
You know, like, remember being in the dentist, that, like, little cup of, like, blue water they give you?
Oh, yeah.
I hated that. I mean, I loved it because I'm like, I need that.
I know. It feels like it's really getting through the crumb.
Uh-huh. I hate that whole experience, though.
Oh, no. That's just a cup for water.
But why is it blue?
I don't know. It's been 4 years since I went to the dentist.
I went to the dentist for the first time in years, like, pretty recently.
I know. Your calmness about it actually made me feel, like, mentally ready to go back.
My calmness about the dentist? Yeah. Oh, because when I broke my tooth in half.
Wait, that's why you went to the dentist?
Yeah, I broke my tooth out of my skull.
Oh, you didn't just... Here I am thinking that you just decided,
no,
I should go
no,
to the
dentist.
No,
it was like I have to... It was like me calling my mom having a panic attack at work.
You broke your tooth?
Yes! I was like, I feel like a cookie. Like I'm crumbling.
Oh my God, how did you break your tooth?
I bit into a bagel and out came my tooth, half of it.
Did it hurt?
No, that was the scary part. And then what I realized it was because it was the previous... root canal that I had done.
Oh.
So I didn't have any nerve there. So I didn't feel the fact that it broke. But then get this. This is the gagger. When I got it filled up, they didn't even give me Novocaine because I had no nerve there. So they were doing like...
Oh, shit.
On my tooth with no Novocaine or anything.
So tell me, what was having a root canal like? Because I've heard of it so as the first a time horrible...
No, this is... Did I talk about when I hit my dentist already? And was removed.
I think I feel like. You have.
So that was the root canal tea. And then, so I tried to get my root canal done the first time, didn't work out.
When you finally did, do you remember?
When I finally did, it was gorgeous. It was beautiful. It was like one of the most, it was the most wonderful procedure I've ever had done.
Really? Because isn't it like they're pulling out like a whole.
It's me laying there on laughing gas while some like beautiful Asian American doctor is like calmly talking to me. I was like, ah, like I almost got an erection. Like it was like so calm and so peaceful. There was like aquarium music sounds like around me and I was fully conscious on this laughing gas and I remember I was like taking the laughing gas. I was like, this is a lot. He goes, oh, we could stop. I go, no, I want more. I was like addicted to the laughing gas.
Uh-huh.
And then I felt him scraping out my gum and scraping, pulling, but it didn't hurt. But I was like aware of the sensations, but I was like, that's interesting. He's scraping out my organs.
Oh my God.
But I was just so calm and peaceful.
You know what? It's probably the laughing gas that helped with that. Because I've heard that it was horrible. And maybe the person who had gotten it done had like a numbing thing.
Because that's what they tried on me in the first place. They tried the little Novocaine. I said, no, I need something stronger. I need something stronger.
Because Novocaine, like, you don't feel it, I guess, but you can still mentally process what's going on, the scraping and shit.
Yeah, it was like mentally, like, giggly.
That's good.
Because something about me, I'm a big person. And when I'm strapped down to a table at a dentist, I become a screaming boar. It's not a pretty sight. Like me with a needle in any vicinity.
I really thought. No, Michael just like went to the dentist. Like maybe it's never, maybe it's my turn. Maybe
I'm happy that that's how it was perceived and that's what you gained from that. But I will never take care of myself without like it being a dire situation. Like. No, like, I
feel that like there's. It's only when like those moments come up that you're like, ah, fuck, I have to go. Yeah.
And then I remember when I was there, they were like, all right, so like your next appointment checkup will schedule for 3 months. I said, okay, that sounds wonderful. The second I left, texted them cancel. Like I didn't even want to say no in person. Uh-huh. So I scheduled
you're like,
the
let
appointment.
Me go out here. Yeah.
Left the front door and texted them cancel. I was like, no, thank you.
3 months is too soon.
Too soon. That's too much. All right. Thank y'all.
Oh, thank you guys. We love you.
Mm.
And we're going to fuck off.
We're going to fuck off. Remember that we are so desperate to hear from you guys because we know you're all perturbed.
We want your stories. Be Reddit. We need a Reddit. We should have a Reddit account.
We should have a Reddit account. So we'll work on that. Hopefully by the time this episode comes out, we'll have a Reddit account. If not, stay tuned.
Stories. Yeah. We need your stories.
Because we know. Here's the thing. We know you're perturbed already. We know you are.
We're all in this together.
We're all perturbed.
Okay.
So we know you're perturbed. We want to hear about it because nobody likes to be perturbed alone. Misery loves company. And that's what this podcast is about. Love you, Mina.
Love you. Tonight.